It's Thursday, September 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, Donald Trump meets with Mexico's president while Hillary Clinton campaigns in Ohio.
The president wants what's good for Mexico, and in sitting down and in talking, we both realize that we've realized this from the beginning, that it's good for both of us. Better for both of us, actually.
President Obama leaves for Asia for his last trip as president. Talks open on ending conflict in Myanmar. Secretary of State Kerry is in India, and Brazil has a new president. It's all on today's International Edition. Thanks for being with us. We start off in Mexico, where U.S. Republican presidential contender Donald Trump and Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto held talks in Mexico City, with the host leader saying the United States and Mexico are important to each other. At a news conference following their meeting, Peña Nieto, speaking here through an interpreter, said the bilateral relationship should be based on mutual respect.
Mexican nationals in the United States are honest people, working people. They are people of goodwill that respect family, they respect life in the community, and they are respectful of the law. As such, Mexicans deserve everybody's respect. Let's continue working to solidify the relationship between Mexico and the United States based on the mutual respect, trust, and the joint attention to all the common challenges that we have.
Donald Trump, who has made a point of saying he will build a wall between Mexico and make Mexico pay for it, and the United States, he said that the two countries share the goals of stopping illegal immigration, drug trafficking, and of preserving their economies.
No one wins in either country when human smugglers and drug traffickers prey on innocent people, when cartels commit acts of violence, when illegal weapons and cash flow from the United States into Mexico, or when migrants from Central America make the dangerous trek, and it is very, very dangerous, into Mexico or the United States without legal authorization.
The Republican nominee said he did raise the issue of the border wall with the Mexican president, but added they did not discuss the cost, saying that would be for another day. Trump added that he thinks that he and Peña Nieto could work together to solve the issues that face both countries. Meanwhile, Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton was campaigning in the battleground state of Ohio. Speaking to the American Legion convention in Cincinnati, Clinton said that Trump's sudden visit to Mexico was more show than substance.
You don't build a coalition by insulting our friends or acting like a loose cannon. You do it by putting in the slow, hard work of building relationships.
The former Secretary of State told the crowd that voters and international allies need the President of the United States to be reliable.
People have to get to know that they can count on you, that you won't say one thing one day and something totally different the next. And it certainly takes more than trying to make up for a year of insults and insinuations by dropping in on our neighbors for a few hours and then flying home again. That is not how it works.
Donald Trump, meanwhile, is scheduled to give a speech on immigration in just a few hours. He will speak to the American Legion Convention in Cincinnati on Thursday. Time to turn now to see what the Twittersphere and the rest of social media have to say about Donald Trump's visit to Mexico. Michael Lippin is in the studio. Michael, how is the world responding?
Thank you, David. Well, it's responding by making the visit one of the top trending items in the U.S. and the world on Wednesday. And the most popular hashtag that people are using to talk about the trip on Twitter is hashtag Trump on Mexico, with on being Spanish for in. Now, there are plenty of Twitter users using that hashtag to share their positive impressions of Trump's meeting with Peña Nieto. Here's one from Joey Manarino, who's a U.S. radio personality. He said, "Trump was more impressive and statesmanlike than I ever imagined. 4 years of this man in charge, and we'll be better off." And here's another from David St. Hilaire, who describes himself as a proud Catholic American from Nebraska. Smart move by Donald Trump basically proved wrong people who say he won't be able to make successful diplomatic trips abroad.
Now, that's the people that are for the Republican nominee. What about his critics?
There's no shortage of them either. Some seized on Trump's comment in the news conference that he raised his idea of building a wall on the U.S.-Mexican border, but did not bring up his long-held position of getting Mexico to pay for it, with those critics saying that that appears as if Trump is showing weakness or backtracking from a key promise that he's made to supporters. We'll have to see. I should add that Hillary Clinton's campaign tweeted a link to a web post in which it said, as Trump meets with President Peña Nieto, a helpful refresher on some of the things he said about Mexico. And that post included Trump tweets like this one from soon after he launched his campaign last year. I like Mexico and love the spirit of Mexican people, but we must protect our borders from people from all over pouring into the U.S. And then there was this Trump tweet from a few months before he started campaigning. Mexico's court system is corrupt. I want nothing to do with Mexico other than to build an impenetrable wall and stop them from ripping off the U.S. David, back to you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael. You can follow Michael on Twitter. He is at Michael_Lippin. You can also follow the International Edition stream. We are at VOA_IE. A brief look at the headlines at this hour. Brazil's Senate has voted to oust President Rousseff in an impeachment trial. The U.S. says a claim that a Russian airstrike killed an Islamic State spokesman is garbage. Turkey has vowed to continue its offensive in northern Syria. A U.S. commander says Afghan forces lost 900 men in July. And Gabon's president is reelected, but the opposition is crying fraud. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on the VOAnews.com website. It's also on our VOA mobile app. You're listening to International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama is on his way to Asia in his last trip to the region as president. As VOA's White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas tells us, one of Mr. Obama's priorities is the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal.
On his 11th and final trip as U.S. president to Asia, Obama's plan to position America as a regional leader hinges on whether he can sell the Trans-Pacific Partnership at home.
Well, right now I'm president, and I'm for it. And I think I've got the better argument.
He must persuade Congress to ratify the 12-nation pact called TPP.
It's not possible to cut ourselves off, given how integrated our economies are.
But he faces huge resistance during this presidential election year, with both major candidates speaking out against the pact.
We will withdraw from the deal before that deal can ever, ever, ever happen.
I oppose it now, I'll oppose it after the election, and I'll oppose it as president.
Even with gains on the diplomatic and security fronts, without TPP, the economic component of the rebalance will collapse. At the ASEAN and East Asia summits in Laos, Obama will seek to reassure members of the U.S. commitment to the rebalance. At a G20 summit in Hangzhou, he will reassure Chinese President Xi Jinping the U.S. does not oppose a rising China. The counterparts also will discuss sensitive topics like Beijing's aggressive posture in the South China Sea and cyber activities. The G20 leaders will discuss ways to stimulate a weak global economy and how to push forward on ways to deal with climate change. Mary Alice Salinas, VOA News, the White House.
Talks designed to end nearly seven decades of fighting between Myanmar's government and ethnic rebel groups opened in the capital of Naypyidaw on Wednesday. Delegates from 17 ethnic minorities filled the convention hall, mingling with military officers and diplomats at the start of the five-day conference. It's a major initiative of Aung San Suu Kyi's first days as leader of Myanmar's new democratically elected government. International Edition's Sarah Williams spoke with reporter Paul Vries in Naypyidaw.
Well, the previous government, which was a quasi-civilian government, already initiated reforms and also started a peace process that was partially successful. And it signed a joint ceasefire with 8 groups last year. But those groups are not considered the most important groups and not the most powerful groups either. So what Aung San Suu Kyi has done after she won an election victory with her National League for Democracy last year, she's taken over this peace process and she's put her own people in within the mechanisms of the peace process so she can control it. And then she has broadened it to include more groups. And she's tried to include all groups. She has succeeded in getting almost everyone in there except for 3 rebel groups. And so this has been the most inclusive peace conference and the first peace conference by Aung San Suu Kyi's government.
Now, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is calling on the government of Myanmar to confer citizenship on the Rohingya Muslim minority. What are some of the complications involved in that?
That is a very politically sensitive issue in Myanmar. And so that group is viewed quite negatively as many people think they are illegal immigrants, though they claim to have been inside Myanmar for generations, and there's plenty of evidence to suggest that. But that is very contentious politically, and that will be very hard, even for Aung San Suu Kyi, to do.
Yeah, because in the past, leader Aung San Suu Kyi, she has been criticized, she and the government have been criticized quite strongly for their dealings with the Rohingya, for almost ignoring them.
Yeah, well, that is correct. Pretty much for the same reason I just mentioned. It is politically very sensitive. A lot of people in the Buddhist majority here don't view that group as belonging in Myanmar. I mean, there's evidence to suggest they've been there very long. And generations, and most of them used to have citizenship before. But yet, Aung San Suu Kyi's party and she herself have done little to speak out on behalf of the Rohingya and their human rights.
What role could the military have in these, or are they having, in these peace talks and in sort of the overall political landscape as all this evolves?
Well, the military remains very powerful politically. They've sort of cemented themselves into the political structure because of the constitution which they wrote. So they have all sorts of means to influence the political process, and they have just autonomy over the security sector. So they are the key to solving the conflict. They seem to be very willing at this stage to go along with the peace process and to let Aung San Suu Kyi take the lead on that. But, for instance, for this conference, the military had a disagreement with 3 groups, and they wanted a certain statement from them. The 3 groups didn't comply, and so those 3 groups could not join this conference. So that shows also the military still can set the boundaries pretty clearly.
That is Sarah Williams with reporter Paul Vries in Naypyidaw. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry urged India Wednesday to take greater responsibility on the global stage in partnership with the United States. VOA State Department correspondent Steve Herman says that Kerry called India an established power with a footprint on matters that affect the entire planet.
It was quite a wide-ranging speech. Basically, Kerry was making the pitch that India is the world's largest democracy and is a country that has really emerged now onto the global stage, needs to be a global leader and help work with the United States as a fellow democracy in tackling all sorts of problems, from countering violent extremism to combating the effects of climate change.
The Secretary of State also mentioned the struggle against international terrorism and extremism. Steve Herman says that Kerry sought to reassure India's leaders that the United States will remain committed to the relationship with India while also maintaining a relationship with Pakistan in the fight against terrorism.
What he said is there's not going to be one country that's going to be able to defeat the scourge of terrorism, nor is there going to be one decisive battle that causes terrorism to go away. and countries such as India and the United States need to better share intelligence. And that is something that they have instituted. And it is a remarkable change for the relationship between these two countries, because the United States for many decades was essentially allied and a major supporter of Pakistan, India's rival and neighbor. So this relationship, he said, has gone to a level that is absolutely unprecedented, but he still wants to see India do more.
In a joint statement issued Tuesday, the United States and India reaffirmed the importance of freedom of navigation in and over the South China Sea. Steve Herman says the Secretary of State Wednesday reiterated that the United States backs India's emergence as a net security provider in the Indian Ocean.
Yes, he did make reference to the recent International Tribunal decision, which he says is binding. And he also mentioned India's role in patrolling in the Bay of Bengal. And again, in a joint statement that the two countries issued after their security and commercial dialogue, it did note these issues in the South China Sea and upholding freedom of navigation and safe passage. So it's very significant that the United States has gotten India to agree to that statement, but the Indians do have rising concerns about the rise of China militarily and its intentions in the region, both close and far away from India.
Later in the day, Kerry and Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker visited India's Prime Minister. The Secretary of State will stay in India in the next few days before traveling on for the G20 summit next week. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA News.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Brazil has a new president. Brazilian senators voted 61-20 to remove President Dilma Rousseff from office after finding her guilty of breaking budget laws. The verdict came down Wednesday after Rousseff, the country's first female president, underwent more than 14 hours of questioning earlier this week. Of the 81 senators, at least 54 had to vote in favor of impeachment for the decision to be binding. Her vice president, Michel Temer, was later sworn in as president.
Prometo manter, defender.
He said he promises to maintain, defend, and obey the Constitution, to observe the laws, promote the well-being of the Brazilian people, support unity and integrity, and the independence of Brazil. Rousseff is alleged to have illegally used money from state banks to cover deficits in the federal budget in an effort to boost her popularity heading into the 2014 election. She denied any wrongdoing in the matter and accused her political opponents of using the trial as a way to overthrow her and undermine Brazil's democracy. The first commercial flight between the United States and Cuba since the 1959 revolution landed mid-morning on Wednesday in the provincial capital of Santa Clara to great fanfare. JetBlue Flight 387 touched down to applause and cheers both from the passengers aboard and airport employees and onlookers watching as the plane made history. Eloy Martin was one of those passengers.
Comfortable to be able to check in at an airport, to connect from one city to the other. And, I mean, it's a 21st century, which I've done before.
U.S. Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox says the arrival opens a new era of U.S.-Cuba travel with about 300 flights a week connecting the United States with the island. It had been cut off from most Americans by the 55-year-old trade embargo on Cuba and a formal ban on U.S. citizens engaging in tourism on the island.
Frankly, when people get more exposure to the American public, it really helps on a lot of levels. Folks want different things economically, they want different things politically, and we see it as a long-term advancement of our relationship, both governmentally as well as culturally.
Direct flights from the United States to Havana are expected to start by the end of the year when U.S. officials say 20 daily flights to the Cuban capital will begin. And the International Olympic Committee has disqualified six more athletes from the 2008 Beijing Games after a reanalysis of doping samples tested positive. Four of the six were awarded medals at those games. In late July, international federations in canoeing and modern pentathlon ruled out seven Russians, including an Olympic gold medalist, for the Games in Rio de Janeiro. The largest group of Russians banned from the Rio Games was in track and field. You've been listening to International Edition. Be sure to like us on Facebook. We're at VOA Now. And follow us on Twitter. We're at @VOA_IE. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. You can find more on the stories you heard on our show and the rest of the day's news at our website, voanews.com. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Days after North Korea conducted a submarine-launched ballistic missile on August 23rd, all 15 members of the UN Security Council strongly condemned the action, as well as the three earlier missile tests North Korea conducted in July and August. The Security Council noted in a press statement that the launches are in grave violation of five Security Council resolutions. In addition, the Security Council regretted that North Korea is diverting resources to the pursuit of ballistic missiles, while the North Korean people have great unmet needs. Elizabeth Trudeau, director of the U.S. State Department's press office, said that the most recent launch by North Korea is the latest in an accelerating campaign of missile tests which violate multiple U.N. Security Council resolutions explicitly prohibiting North Korea's launches. Using ballistic missile technology imposes threats to civil aviation and maritime commerce in the region. Japan, China, and South Korea also criticized the test, Japan calling it an unforgivable act of violence, South Korea saying the launch posed a serious threat to the South's security, China stating its opposition to the development of North Korea's nuclear program and any words or deeds that create tensions in the peninsula. The Security Council urged all member states to strengthen efforts to implement sanctions imposed on North Korea for its flagrant violations of its Security Council obligations. The Council also stressed the importance of a diplomatic resolution to the situation and the need for maintaining peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula and in Northeast Asia and beyond. U.S. State Department Press Office Director Trudeau called on North Korea to stop actions and rhetoric that further raise tensions in the region and focus instead on taking concrete steps towards fulfilling its commitments and international obligations. The U.S. commitment to the defense of our allies, including the Republic of Korea and Japan, in the face of these threats, remains ironclad, she said. We remain prepared to defend ourselves and our allies.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.